Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I am Rod Jones, content manager at the Institute, and in this podcast, we will be looking at news from the week up to the 16th of December 2019. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Rod.
Our first story is taken from a report in The Telegraph that a Sikh job hunter who was denied work at Claridge's because of a no beards policy has won £7,000 in compensation. Bosses at Elements Personnel Services Limited refused to offer work to Raman Sethi, who has a beard, due to grooming standards from its five-star clients. The agency specialises in providing staff for London's five-star hotels and had in the past received complaints from hotels, including an email from Claridge's in April 2018, which read, "No ponytails, no facial hair. Please ensure none of that here at Claridge's," said Judge Holly Stout. But Judge Stout found that the hotels had not been consulted by the agency over whether they would make an exception on religious grounds and awarded Raman Sethi £7,102.17 compensation, including £5,000 for injury to feelings. She said the agency has not produced any evidence of their clients being asked about whether they would accept a Sikh working for them who could not shave for religious reasons. Kate, what lessons should employers take from this case?
Well, the main lesson is how careful and thoughtful you have to be. And with any vacancy that you're advertising, really think about what it is that's needed for the job, especially if you're using an agency, and be very mindful of diversity all the time. And you don't need or want to exclude people through thoughtlessness. And I think that's what's happened here.
Thank you, Kate. Our next story is a story by Nicole Goodkind reporting on a discussion on increasing inclusivity and diversity in the workplace, which took place at Fortune's recent Most Powerful Women Next Gen Summit in Laguna Niguel, California. A panel of experts at the conference agreed that in order to truly increase inclusion and diversity in the workplace, employees need to initiate those awkward and sometimes painful conversations around prejudices. Organisational systems of promoting diversity like bias training and pipeline programmes are necessary, said Dara Treseder, Chief Marketing Officer of digital manufacturing company Carbon, but we actually have to talk and have a conversation, which is really hard. Delana Brand, Vice President of People Experience and Head of Inclusion and Diversity at Twitter, said that in order to accomplish the goal of making the social media platform the most inclusive tech company in the world, every performance review includes a discussion of how the employee has made efforts to break down barriers to inclusivity. It's about creating and promoting a culture, she said. In reviews, employees are asked to note what they've done to make the company a better company. Brand says all employees are asked to join two employee resource groups, one you identify with, but one you want to be an ally to. Kate, would you agree with the panel that awkward and sometimes painful conversations have an important role to play in increasing inclusivity and diversity in the workplace?
Yes, because if we weren't behaving at times in ways that aren't inclusive, if we aren't actively seeking to have a more diverse workplace, then we're doing something wrong. And a recognition of that can be awkward and it can be very uncomfortable. But I think what's so important about what Delana is saying here is about it being in the moment between two people. Nobody feels included because of a lovely policy document. Nobody feels included or part of what's going on in a company because there are posters on the wall telling them that. You feel included because people talk to you as an equal. You have conversations, you form relationships, and in those relationships, it's not about inclusivity and diversity, is it? It's just about being human with somebody else. And I think that's what she's encouraging us all to aim for.
Thank you, Kate. Our next story is taken from the Harvard Business Review Online, where Andrea S. Kramer and Alton B. Harris take a close look at the persistent myth of female office rivalries. They write that the popular press is full of articles claiming women bully other women, spread malicious rumours about them, behave in two-faced ways towards them, and seek to undermine their professional standing. The problem with all such claims is that they are simply not true. In conducting research for our book, It's Not You, It's the Workplace, we could find no empirical evidence supporting the notion that women are more mean-spirited, antagonistic, or untrustworthy in dealing with other women than men are in dealing with other men. Indeed, the best recent psychological research finds that one sex has little or no bearing on personality, cognition, and leadership. They go on to argue that occasional tensions in women's working relationships are wrongly attributed to some innate female characteristic when they can be explained by gender bias and affinity bias in the workplace. That is, affinity bias and gender bias often work in tandem to make women's same-gender workplace relationships difficult because they limit the number of positions for women at leadership tables, thereby forcing the people vying for those spots into direct competition with each other. These dynamics can foster antagonism between women, which is then often wrongly attributed to their inherent nature rather than to workplace circumstances. Kate, why do you think the notion that women undermine other women in the workplace is so widely held?
Well, I think because of commentary like this. I mean, when I first heard it, started to listen to what you were saying, I was thinking, yeah, absolutely right. This is a myth. Women, certainly in my experience, a long career of working with many, many women, I have never experienced this. And then all of a sudden, they go on to say, oh, well, this will happen because of there's a limited resources that women are arguing about. No, they're not. I think a lot of time, any sort of behaviour, any conflict, people seek often to make it disappear, to pretend it's not happening, or to rationalise it in a way that suits their mindset, not the people involved with the disagreement. And I think when you see men disagreeing in a meeting, it's not explained by the inherent rivalry that exists between males in the workplace. It's perhaps just understood as having different ideas. And I think let's not put our own values or interpret things through our own lens as to what is making people fall out, and actually just think that maybe it's that essential creative tension. We need difference and we need divergent opinions. And as long as they are conducted respectfully, long may they continue.
Thank you very much indeed, Kate. Our next story looks at how remote workers make friends. This is a recent study on collaboration from the Harvard Business Review that takes as its starting point previous research demonstrating that when employees have friends at work, they are better performers, more engaged, and happier with their jobs. The authors undertook an 18-month study of the Midwest division of a global technology corporation and found that remote workers often experienced virtuality as a barrier to forming friendships with their colleagues. To overcome this barrier, they had to establish what the authors of the study termed cadence. That is, remote workers feel like they have cadence with a co-worker when they understand who that person is and can predict how they will interact with them. The authors suggest that if you're looking to make friends when working virtually, it will require being proactive and taking chances, but you can help foster it by being a reliable work partner and responding in a timely manner to remote co-workers. Then, when you sense friendship potential, reach out to the co-worker to share something a little more personal. Kate, what advice would you give to leaders to build cadence in their organisations to foster more connected relationships between virtual workers in their organisations?
Well, what great advice that is. Do what you say you will and do it at the time that you said you would. What better way of being liked in the first instance by your co-workers? Great colleagues make for a great place to work. And if you're proud of your colleagues because they're doing brilliant work, as indeed I am at the Institute, then friendships follow much more easily because you've started with a very positive impression of that person. And that's even more under the spotlight with virtual work, because in many ways you haven't got those opportunities to make excuses or to explain why something hasn't been done. You've either delivered the work on time or you haven't. But the real lesson for this from me is that recognition that people do like to form social relationships at work. When work is a friendly and sociable place, people are a lot happier. And that's just as important to remote workers as it is to the people who see each other every day in an office. And so if you can arrange for meetings for people to get together, use video conferencing whenever you can, limit the size of meetings, don't use conference calls unless you absolutely have to. There's so much technology around that can help build those social friendships and make colleagues friends rather than just co-workers.
Thank you, Kate. Before we conclude this week's podcast, is there anything you'd like to tell us that's been going on at the Institute or that you've been involved in recently?
Yes, we were so excited to receive an invitation from the BBC World News, in fact, to contribute to a discussion on meetings with Professor Stephen Rogelberg, who joined us by video link from the United States. And we had so much interest in that on Twitter as the programme was going out. And obviously, meetings is a subject that touches many of us.
Thank you, Kate. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your insights on these stories.
Thank you, Rod.